Hey, this is Laura.
And Steven.
And this is our podcast, Midday Musings, where we take our lunch break to talk about the things that are on our mind. Today, we are discussing the final episode of HBO's miniseries, The Regime. Don't yet rejoice. Starring Kate Winslet, charting one catastrophic year in the regime of a Central European country, the government has fallen. All is lost. Or is it? Let's get into it. Hey there, Steven.
Hey, Laura. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I keep thinking, though.
What do you keep thinking about?
The last episode of HBO miniseries, The Regime.
Oh my gosh, right? The Regime.
Don't yet rejoice.
Season finale.
Yes, season finale. Like, Elena's government has fallen.
Oh my gosh, right.
Zubek and she are on the run in a war-torn countryside.
Dude, this episode had so much going on. Like, they just pop out of this little manhole into the middle of a famine, like a field that has clearly fallen to famine.
Yeah.
And she is, like, cartoonishly freaking out.
Yeah, and she is unable to accept the reality she finds herself in.
Whoa.
She's just a person trying to survive as Zubek tries to get into her head.
Right.
And she is like, no, I am the chancellor. I have power. We can do anything because I can do anything. We'll just call somebody. We'll just get a plane out of here. And Zubek is like, how do we do that? And she's like, I don't know. I just do it.
Right.
Is gorgeous.
It really is. She has no idea how to actually do anything. She knows how to get other people to do things. So she's completely out of her own world. And he calls her on it. He said, like, at a certain point, he physically has to restrain her and goes, your government has fallen. You're in my world now. You have no power here. You have to act like a soldier in order to survive. And she's like, oh no, I hate that. But she finally, like, is shaken out of her kind of cartoonish frenzy.
I don't know that she's fully ever fully shaken out of it. And how could you be after 10 years of absolute power? Okay, so they pop up out of this little manhole from the palace tunnels. It is a wheat field that is clearly left fallow. Over the last 6 months, we can probably assume the civil war has been raging on. And I gotta tell you, it is hard to plant a harvest during a civil war.
Yeah, tell me about it.
This little field, they go past it into a forest. Like, you can hear gunfire, you can see bombs, you can hear, like, the telltale rolling of military vehicles. And at a certain point, as they're running through the forest, a plane drops all of these leaflets, which is like a super duper normal practice in war zones. The leaflets say the government has fallen, services will soon resume under the authority of the rebel group, the Westgate rebel group.
Mm-hmm.
Looks great, feels great. She cannot take this information.
No.
And I would describe her emotional state as a few sigmas away from Jenna Maroney of 30 Rock.
Oh my gosh.
But
right.
Definitely within the Jenna Maroney parabola of delusion and grandiosity.
Which is such a fun thing to see her going through, because all throughout this entire series, it's been a political comedy. The tone has been, it's a very silly, absurdist political comedy. But at this point, the tone completely shifts. Like, she is yet more comical than she's ever been, but all around her, it's total chaos. It's like you've stepped into a war movie. It's like it's gone from political comedy to Saving
World
Private
War
Ryan.
II.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like Poland in World War II. It is bad news.
Yeah.
There's a military van going around announcing a curfew at 9 p.m. We cannot guarantee your safety if you're out after 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone is holding Elena, we are going to apprehend and or kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to be Elena in this environment, obviously.
Oh, yeah. She's
like,
thriving.
She's enemy of the state, number one. Head of state, enemy of the state, whatever. They
right.
have to get out, right?
So where do they go, Laura?
Okay, so her initial idea is calling Nikki in Switzerland, because Switzerland would be easy to get to from here. But no, Nikki's still helping her out, because they stay in the bombed out remnants of one of his poetry centers.
Yeah.
Nobody's there. Like, even in times of war, Zubek's like, see, nothing is here. There's no reason anyone would be here.
And even with Nikki being somewhere exiled to Switzerland, he is still helping her, because he built this poetry center that she's able to hide out in. It's hilarious.
It's sort of sweet.
It's kind of sweet.
It's sort of sweet. And it's worth noting about like the romantic entanglements in this show. Nikki as a long-term husband, killing it. Adorable. We love Nikki. But finally, in this context, I understand the Zubak Elena thing. Like, I didn't really get it in the palace. I didn't understand. Like, I understood the connection in so much as it was clearly a product of midlife crisis and heartbroken man, like, just coming together. But they really start to work when the chips are down. There's authentic chemistry and mutual utility here. It's the first time I'm like, yeah, I'm into this love story. Keep going. Oh, yeah.
They are trauma bonding like crazy out in this war situation, in this civil war.
God, do you think that's what it is?
Because
sometimes I'm worried that my idea of romance cannot be disentangled from the strength of trauma bonding. Like, there's something about trauma bonding that I find deeply romantic.
I mean, maybe, but it is kind of romantic. The thing about their relationship, though, is that I think this is the moment when she really, truly understands she can 100% trust Zubak, because they're in his world and he's in charge now. He's the one that has to be in control in this situation, because she has no idea how to maneuver the common man world. She has no clue. And there's just something about maybe him being in charge that makes her go, I was so tired of being in charge for so long. It's nice to have someone else take the wheel. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know if that's the case. I still don't think she's ever fully in the space where she understands that she needs someone to help her in a concrete way. But what I notice about Zubek's characterization is it's like he wakes up when he's outside of the palace. It's like suddenly he's not confused. He spends almost his entire time in the palace confused, because it's deeply confusing and bizarre and unreal, because that's the world of Elena.
Yeah, there's no logic.
There's no logic. But in reality, he knows what's going on. And it's like his eyes are crystal clear. He knows what to do. He's awake, finally. He's no longer dreaming, maybe.
I mean, that could be.
Because you are stuck inside the palace dream. And like, dreams have been such a large theme throughout this miniseries and central to their connection. This is like the one time they're together in reality.
And it's fun watching them together in this reality, because he is crystal clear. His value is there. Like, clearly he knows how to navigate this world. Mm-hmm. Whereas she becomes a cartoonish, like, character.
She's like a little girl crossed with Napoleon.
Yeah. She has no idea what's going on. She doesn't have realistic expectations. She thinks she can just call China for help. And he's like, China isn't here. They are hundreds of thousands of miles away. We have to just get to a house, get to a safe place. And she does not understand that. He's having to like literally drag her through the street, because she's like, I'll just go and talk to someone. They'd be honored to support their chancellor. He's like, no, they wouldn't.
Just need to see me.
They just need to see me.
Oh, she's wild. Like, yeah. she has been Instagramming everything up until this point. Like, even the Christmas dinner, she was Instagramming. Even the change of regime, she was Instagramming. She's in that sort of psychologically disconnected state that heavily online people sometimes fall into, where like the physical boundaries of reality don't seem real. Like, the fact that other countries are far away doesn't seem real. The fact that you can't immediately connect to other people doesn't seem real. The fact that you need food and water and shelter doesn't seem real. Anyway, so night falls. No one can guarantee your safety after 9 p.m. And they start trying to hitch rides.
Oh, I love this part.
The first guy who shows up, Zubek is like, hello, help me, please. This is my friend. We need to get somewhere. And it reveals, you know, the chancellor, Elena, would you mind helping us out? And he's like, dude, my house is bombed. I'm just trying to get to my brother. Peace out. Drives away.
I'm out. I can't deal with this.
I won't do it.
But then the next guy.
He has sort of like fanciful Christmas lights going on. He appears to be drunk.
Oh, he's incredibly drunk. You find out by the time he shows up.
And he's like, "Oh, Chancellor Elena, it would be my honor to take you to my home, which is so safe.
I am your humble servant. Oh, and Zubak too? wow, it truly is a Christmas. And you kind of believe him. Like,
he's, yeah, you're like, okay, this guy is a loyalist. He's an old white guy. You could imagine that, right? They're into the autocracy.
Oh, for sure. And like, they are driving. I love the scene where they are. I got to talk to this because they are driving. He is swerving. It is immediately apparent how freaking drunk this guy is, like dangerously drunk. Alana's trying to talk to him, get information from him while he's driving. So he's turning back around and trying to talk to her too, swerving violently, almost hitting several fence posts and people. Zubak's like, just let him drive.
Just please, look at the road.
For the love of God, Alana, just let him look at the road. So they finally arrive at his place and he's
He has a phone.
Yeah, he's got a phone. He's got a safe space. It's just him, right? So you think, oh, wow, this is actually working out pretty well.
Yeah, this will be fine.
Yeah, he gets them in. He gets a disguise for them. Alana has a cartoonish disguise on, like she's got glasses and like a little hat.
It's silly. It's very silly.
Yeah, she looks like a librarian that came in from the cold.
Very chilly librarian.
Right? Zubak got a little hat on. Anyway, so he...
Yeah,
he,
but as you're going up through the apartment building, you're seeing like the debris of war, right? Yeah. You've got some people sleeping, some like toppled over grocery carts. You've got some barricades up. It's like, oh, for 6 months a war has been going on here.
Yeah.
And like the palace has been untouched. So this is a really major flip, right? In terms of the aesthetic, in terms of the physical reality you're occupying, you suddenly see all of the stuff that has been happening outside the palace walls. Mm-hmm. So they go into the guy's apartment. They're all, everyone's really squirrely. Someone across the way opens their door a little bit. It's an older lady and she like looks at them.
Gives them a long you're like, look.
Oh no.
Don't like that.
Oh no. This was relevant later. And they're like, do you trust your neighbor? And he's like, yes, of course. I trust everyone. Like, what side is everyone on? It's all sides. We're just people, blah, blah, blah. and he's like, yeah, go ahead and use my phone. It's in this room that has a heavy door. Don't even worry about
it. Yeah, don't even worry about it. Just get behind this door. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so what does he do? They go in that door. I'm surprised that Zubak actually went in there with her. Because you'd think he'd be like, no, she'll go in there. I'll stay out here and keep watch. But they both go in there in a panic to get to find the phone. And this dude that is housing them locks the door behind them. And you realize, oh, no.
And he's then, like, actually the rebel mask comes loyalist. Off. And he's like, oh, you sold our country. You stole our money. I'm calling my brother in the security forces. And so it has all been a ruse. And now they are imprisoned awaiting capture from a rebel group, the security forces, right?
And then Laskin shows back up.
Yeah, then a member of her cabinet, Mr. Glasses McGee, her comms guy. He's the one who's always telling her, like, this is what's going on internationally. The Chinese are like, we support you, but we'll offer no material support. America doesn't support you. And she has been verbally abusing him for months.
So hard.
So his turn, reasonable. He shows up with the security forces. He's rule of lawing this, though. He has, like, a folder, and he's like, okay, Alana, do you accept the following? Like, we must ask you questions. She's like, I'll answer no questions. He's like, please note that the chancellor has declined the answering of questions.
They're like, rebel, chancellor has declined.
And they're like, okay, so the Westgate rebels have joined with the security forces, and now we are the National Freedom Front. And he's the head of this new governing body. Right.
And so at that point, things are looking really bad for Alana. She's been freaking out. She actually tried to very poorly attempt to kill herself.
Oh, yeah.
Before Laskin showed up.
With like a shard of wood.
Yeah. Just like stabbing at her veins. Maybe it'd be better if I was just off dead. And then Laskin shows up and he actually does a pretty good job of interrogating them. He separates Alana and Zubak and tells the other one that their compatriot betrayed them.
Yeah, Will Tracy, who's the creator of the show, was saying that this is taking directly from the Soviet interrogation process based on a memoir that he read. So what they would do is they would separate you into two locations and they would talk to you antagonistically in both. They'd basically be like, your friend has betrayed you. This is what they've said. Back to the other one, they've betrayed you. This is what they've said. You should cooperate with us. Basically, bad cop, bad copping.
Right.
All over the place.
And she's pretty much out of power at this point. There's not much she can do, but then she realizes something. A flaw in Laskin's demeanor in what he's saying that makes her realize she still has power.
Yeah.
She says, you still need me, don't you? You need me to make a statement. You don't have the support to actually run this regime, don't you?
Yeah, she's like, you don't have the loyalist stronghold. You don't have the hills. You don't have you don't even have the Americans. You need me for the peaceful transition of power. Mm-hmm. And so she goes into negotiating, which is delightful. Like, you really just appreciate Elena in this moment. Because as deluded and sort of like neurotic as she is, every once in a while, the clear cleverness, the thing that made her able to be in power for this long and to take power initially is there.
Yeah.
It is very clearly there. And so she starts taking the upper hand in this conversation, mm-hmm. at which point Laskin utilizes his knowledge of her neuroses and like gets this canister that they just put a handwritten black mold spores
black sign Sharpie.
On. And like, they place it over her mouth, like, to threaten that she inhales the deadly black mold that mm-hmm. she was initially so afraid of in episode one.
But anyone that knows anything about black mold knows it doesn't really live in, like, a pressurized canister.
And it is certainly not written in Sharpie.
Right? So she's so politically astute, but doesn't understand how real world things work.
Yeah.
So she's like, I've got the upper hand. And then the canister comes out, and she's like, no, no. Instantly, she's like a little girl again. She has no power. She's like, I'll do whatever you want. Fine, just get the black mold away from me.
Yeah, and so it's like, okay, cool. Here's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. We're going to clean you up. We're going to take you to Parliament. You're going to make a statement. We're going to do the peaceful transition of power. Fine, fine, fine. They get into the elevator.
Oh, the elevator. They get into that elevator.
They get into that elevator. They go down to the ground floor, and then bam, 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 gunshots to the head of Laskin and the security forces. Elena, Zubek are fine.
Yeah, it's like a U.S. Black Ops operation.
Because it is.
Mm-hmm, it is. So the U.S. Black Ops shows up.
Yeah,
they extricate
yeah.
them very roughly, I'll say.
Very roughly.
They're not like, you know, Madam Chancellor, come with us.
But it's fully adorable because you've never been so excited to see Americans.
Right? You're like, the Americans
you just see
here.
The subtitles like, American man speaks, and he's like, come with me. And you're like, Americans, wonderful.
So they extract them and they
yeah,
bring
yeah.
them
and
up
you
to
see
this...
the neighbor who like peeked out of the door
oh,
a little
her.
While ago.
That.
So you're like, oh, I see. You were an American plant. That's what happened here.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh,
catch
you missed that?
No,
yeah, no, that
what?
Was the fun little denouement right there.
Oh, I love that.
And so she gets taken to this really, really nice airport hotel where it looks untouched by any of the Civil War. Like, there are American forces surrounding it. On the drive over, you're seeing the landscape of the Civil War in daylight. You have mm-hmm. just people in plainclothes holding guns. You see a bunch of graffiti around. You see like the crumbling infrastructure that you associate with war zones. And then you bleed into this perfectly untouched hotel.
So pretty.
In which, who could have guessed, Emil, the billionaire,
Emil
is
Bartos.
Waiting. Yeah, Emil
He's
Bartos
there.
Is waiting for you. You haven't seen him since episode 3, but there he is, Deus Ex Machina with a conference call.
With a conference call to the U.S.
Yeah, and to the senator that she terrorized in episode 2.
That is such a good reveal. I gotta say, like, Emil Bartos showing up, I thought he may have been killed. I thought
he was dead,
death,
yeah.
Honestly. He shows up, they sit down, they start talking, and Elena realizes quickly, wait, hold on. Like, she's kind of freaking out. She's like, am I alive? Am I dead? Are you going to kill me? And then she realizes they're on a conference call, and she doesn't know who's on the other line.
Yeah, it's just crackling.
Uh-huh. Every now and then.
Yeah.
And then you realize it's Judith. It's Judith, the U.S. senator that she totally humiliated last time she was in Elena's palace.
But like, God bless the American state staff, right? The State Department is delightful. What I really liked was Emil's framing of this meeting and conversation. He's like, well, you know, partisanship is bad for business. And he's like, there's a reality, right? Where this could happen. Cobalt mines could reopen. Mm-hmm. And people would welcome a ballast against the Chinese, someone to talk strong against China. Like, this, and as the new American administration settles in, like, sanctions could ease, policies could change.
Right.
Is that what you think could happen? And then you hear on the other line, Judith is just like, it's plausible.
Right? It's such a good moment. And Judith is like, we could provide support ostensibly if there were some changes to be made and, you know, some assurances to be assured for us. And Elena's like, all right, I guess I have to think about this. I have to consider this.
Yeah, yeah. And it's presented as a choice, but like, honestly,
oh, no, she has no choice.
There's no choice. There's no choice.
Like, what's the alternative? What else would they do to her? No, I mean, Yeah.
Yeah. Like, basically, in addition, they're like, we have to get rid of Zubak. Like, you two together, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So the choice is Zubak or her power, which is obviously not a choice at all.
No, not for her, for sure.
But, like, she tries to sell it to Zubak as, like, you know, we do this, we wait, and then eventually later, when things cool down, we'll take power. It'll be great. Like, they want a puppet governor, America does, and they want it to be me. And, like, he gets it. He's not stupid. Yeah. Like, this is the one area where he's just very smart. And so instead of the whole, we will fight them, which is what she's saying, he's like, I will fight them. Mm. And they have a last romantic interlude. They speak sweetly to each other. She's like, you have been so important to me. I needed you so much. You don't know how much I needed you at this time. And even though he is, like, the kernel of all of this destruction, it does really appear to be whatever passes for love for Elena.
It's as good as she knows it.
Yeah. He wakes up to a gun in his face. You hear a gunshot and you see her face sort of cold and accepting of the choices that she's made. And it's clear what her choice has been.
Yeah.
Boom. It's victory day again.
Yeah. So it's victory day. Now she's a little bit more resigned, a little more sullen.
She's in black and gold.
Black. Oh,
so that's she's been wearing green the entire time that she was initially in the palace. She wore red to do the transfer of power from herself to Zubak, but that never happened. So she was on the run in red, and now she is in black and gold. Interesting. She and Nikki are getting ready for Victory Day. If you remember, the first episode was Victory Day initially, so this is a full year from the beginning of the miniseries. And he's like, you look great, like, especially considering all of this that has just gone down. The horrible year.
Yeah, which, by the way, I looked it up. That's exactly what Queen Elizabeth called her year when three of her kids were divorced, tons of slander about them in the newspaper, and her childhood house was burned down. So that's actually
Elizabeth or Victoria?
Queen Elizabeth, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Please go. Yeah, I looked up the quote. I was like, oh, someone probably said this before. Someone in power. And yeah, she totally had an annus horribilis as well. Not as bad as Elena's, honestly. Elena's was worse.
But in fairness, Elena did all of it. I don't think Queen Elizabeth did much of anything.
No. It's just so fun to watch Elena at this point, because she has accepted what has happened. It's like things have gone back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah, you've sort of done a reset, but everything has changed. Yeah. Even though everyone's in the same position they were a year ago, everything has changed. Yeah. And, like, Nikki has that sort of softness in his eyes and face that his actor said is brokenness. Mm-hmm. But I think just looks really sweet. He's like so soft and gooey. Yeah. I love Nikki.
But Elena looks heartbroken, honestly.
Yeah, but she looks good.
She does. She wears it well. She wears it well. And, like, now the Americans are involved. She has her power back. And the thing that I love is, well, two things I love. Nikki asks her, what was the annus horribilis about? What was this horrible year about? And she just kind of sits and thinks for a second and goes, oh, you know what? I had a bit of a wobble.
Just a little wobble.
A little wobble. You know, this midlife crisis caused thousands of deaths and an international incident. She just attributed as a little wobble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like the queen of understatement.
Right.
But here's what I really like. Any viewer could tell you exactly what happened. Mm. Certainly midlife crisis. Like, Will Tracy considers the background of this the tale of a midlife crisis. And I definitely agree that it has all those hallmarks, especially considering she was going through that weird, like, Charlemagne obsession a year before the year that was horrible. But no, her dad died is what happened. And we hear from Laskin during the interrogation scene that it's possible that her dad had abused her.
That's a good point, yeah.
And any psychologist will tell you that when someone's abuser dies, some bombs go off inside the victim's head. And I think that's the primary driver of this terrible, terrible year. Like, it's... She's clearly quirky, and she clearly has been quirky for a while, but the almost fatal missteps are someone in mental health crisis. So
yeah,
that's what I think happened. She gives a speech to her subjects on the balcony, mm-hmm. entirely encased in bulletproof glass. It's magical. It looks insane. Like, the Pope isn't this well guarded.
No.
And clearly the Americans have staffed the Capitol, stocked the Capitol to the brim with Elena supporters, because they're all like, yay, Elena. They've got the little signs that are like, we love you, Elena. So the rebel threat has been clearly washed away, at least from the Capitol. And she is clearly ensconced in power. She's talking strong against China. She's thanking the Americans for the resumption of Western trade, blah, 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 blah. And then after this, like, Evita Perón moment.
Very Evita Perón. I was thinking the same thing.
She goes back into that little tomb where she used to keep her dad.
Yes, the tomb.
And there's still that glass coffin. And it's still, like, resting in state. And it's still, like, the Leninite sort of preserved body thing. But this time, it's Zubak. So they really are just kind of in the same place again.
Yeah.
But with a different cast of characters guiding the neuroses. I like that so much because I think psychologically what she was trying to do was replace her dad this whole time to have another strong male figure in her life. And Zubak taking the dad's place is honestly kind of a psychological step forward.
And didn't she accomplish it? I mean,
she, like,
in a way, yeah.
In the ugliest way possible, she might have just handled this mental health crisis. Maybe it was just a little wobble.
Yeah.
A little wobble for the country.
And in some ways, Zubak got a chance to do, prove his worth, do something big and important, you know?
It was big and important.
And he had a chance to be in love. He was absolutely in love with her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think she was as in love as she's capable of being.
Do you think that he knew that he was going to his death when she agreed to side with the Americans at the end of the show? I'm not sure.
I don't know if he was certain, but I think his philosophy of life always ended this way. Mm. Like, he's a man, by his actor's own admission, of deep despair.
And he's a soldier, too.
So saying goodbye at the end of a gun, that's the way his story ends. Mm. I think that's the way he always knew his story would end. And he doesn't seem surprised.
No, he's like, oh, well, yeah, I expected this.
Standard. Okay.
So his life ends the way he expected it to. Elena gets to move on from some of the trauma from her dad, have a new strong male figure.
Yeah, have a new psychological touch point.
Yeah.
Have someone new to talk to, at least.
Yeah.
It's far less fraught than, like, a parental relationship. And it's possible that, like, this is the way their relationship can be healthy. Having just this one-sided repository of all of her angst. Nikki's there to take care of her in the practical way, and her psychological yawning void can be channeled through discussing things with Zubak in his little glass coffin. And maybe it's better. Like, maybe this is the equivalent of a happy ending. It reminds me so much of the ending of Succession, where at the end, everything changed, but nothing really changed.
Yeah.
And no one's problems were really resolved, but there was a kind of tragic happiness to it, you know, like this is how it's going to be. Like, our protagonist has what they want.
Yeah.
Power, but at what cost? Like, the human cost of power is, to me, what Will Tracy's filmography is all about.
Mm-hmm.
He's fascinated by what power does, and with all the darkness of history surrounding power. In one of the extras on HBO Max, he was talking about how reading about dictators is kind of his beach reading.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he devours dictator documentaries. He mentions that.
Yeah, and that's, to me, a psychologically healthy way to approach reality.
Right.
Just, like, know what's going on. And understand, like, the levers of power and the psychological cost of power. They always say that a certain amount of money and power manifests in people in the same way that brain damage does. Mm-hmm. Like, their ability to empathize decreases. And you really, really see that in both Succession and The Regime, and also The Menu. like just this disconnect that extreme prestige gives you. And what does that actually look like in a human being in a close up?
Yeah.
What does that look like? Because we see it everywhere in our own lives and history. We see the great men and women of our age in wide view, in news stories, in documentaries, maybe if we're particularly interested in biographies. But like, what's the human part of these greatnesses? I really liked the regime. I think it's chewy. There's a lot to look at.
There really is. Everything about it, I love how it kind of starts where it begins, but with people in a different emotional state. You know, they have gone through a whole thing and at what cost? And now it's back to where it was. And there are tons of casualties as a result. But I guess it's kind of where it was before.
No, just it's
with
like
American support.
Everything is the same, but nothing is the same.
Right? It's all similar, but also very, very different. And I loved it.
And that's such a human experience, right? Yeah. Like everything is the same, but nothing is the same. We go through our little loops of our lives, and every year something huge changes. I always think about like my brother's family, like you see them on a yearly basis and so much changes. Even though everything stays the same.
Yeah. Everything Wild. Changes and everything stays the same all at once.
All at once.
Is real cheery, Lua. It was real cheery. Yeah. The Regime. So if you haven't seen it, highly recommend it. Great show. Obviously tons of spoilers in this, but I hope you had a good time listening to our conversation, yeah. Analysis, etc.
I don't think that knowing the plot takes away anything from watching the show.
Oh, absolutely. I think you can know everything that's going to happen and still have a blast because the execution, my friends, these actors are acting their heart out.
Everyone is operating like full speed ahead.
Right. Well, that said, I think we should give our listeners their lunch break back.
Yeah. We went a little long today, but hope you guys had a good one and have a good rest of your day.
All right, folks. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.
This has been Steven.
And Laura.
Thanks for tuning into Midday Musings, the podcast where we talk about all the things on our mind. Be sure to follow us on Spotify and jump into the conversation in our polls and Q&As. We would love to hear from you. Catch you next lunch break.